In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The sheer speed is pretty stunning. I would call it, use the old German phrase, the lightning war, the blitzkrieg of the social revolution. And its front has proven to be, and many people saw this a long way off, our courts, not the voting box, not where people express their opinions and their ideas in a democracy, but our courts, even the highest court in the land. The sexual revolution has found its way, found its successes there in our judicial system. Now, that's simply the reality. What is the future now that this has gotten rolling, and it is rolling very, very fast? Joining us to talk about the federal government and public schools, Andrew Walker. He's director of public studies for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission for the Southern Baptist Convention, and he's author of a recent column titled How the Federal Government is Transforming Public Education. Andrew, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd. It's good to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
What was telling about the online response of the U.S. Department of Education right after the now famous Obergefell ruling by the Supreme Court?
Yeah, you know, this is actually something that flew underneath the radar. So soon, the day of, actually within a couple hours after the Supreme Court had issued its now infamous Obergefell ruling, the Department of Education, which, mind you, is an enormously powerful federal agency, changed its Facebook avatar to a rainbow flag, which may seem innocent to some people because the rainbow is somewhat of a ubiquitous symbol in our culture, but the rainbow is also synonymous with the gay rights movement. And so when you have a federal agency having the audacity or the gall to change their avatar to something that's innately controversial and divides Americans, it shows you just how far the sexual revolution has become entrenched throughout all quarters of government, and how essentially, with inevitably, the Department of Education is going to take this worldview and it's going to affect public education because of the very nature of public education.
I wonder, are they planning to take this worldview, or had they already adopted it but just hadn't announced it yet?
Well, so I think that the success of the gay rights movement has been, it's been very evident in the past few years. I think it's gained steam, especially since 2008 onward. But I think what we saw with the decision to change the avatar on Facebook was kind of a cultural symbol of, wow, this has actually finally taken root and it's official. The government is adopting the position that sexual difference between a man and a woman is arbitrary, and that we're going to adopt the position that the government ought to be in the business of taking sides in the culture war and saying that if you disagree with our view of the culture war, you're now on the opposite side of government policy. And as we all know, government policy is supposed to treat issues like this neutrally. It's not supposed to line up against citizens on certain divisive issues. And that's what I think was most offensive, is the fact that, yeah, the court did rule, but then to take a controversial decision and then change your Facebook avatar is kind of just spiking the football in the end zone, so to speak, and kind of walking on your cultural enemies' necks to say, hey, we've bested you, now conform or else. And then you saw also, in the same way, you saw the rainbow on the White House was lit up that night in rainbow colors, which just kind of signals how far the government has taken the principles of the sexual revolution to heart.
Did Justice Anthony Kennedy, in essence, give those agencies, including whoever was lighting the White House, kind of the green light for those things when he not only implied but simply said in his decision there that any kind of opposition to this new definition of marriage can only come from animus, can only come from some kind of bigotry.
Yeah, he certainly did. And what's even more ironic is that it's the same Anthony Kennedy who, in the same decision, would give some level of acknowledgement to the historical beliefs of Christians and Muslims and Jews pertaining to marriage, and say that, you know, those beliefs have a right to be respected and to continue to be held. But we just don't see that playing out in society, and it's very interesting. If you go back and read the dissents of the other justices, particularly Justice Roberts and Justice Alito, they call out Anthony Kennedy for his kind of devaluation of religious liberty, because in Anthony Kennedy's mind, religious liberty is primarily about having the freedom to exercise belief. And the justices called this out as inaccurate and unhistorical, because the First Amendment is about the free exercise of religion. And at one point in his dissent, Justice Alito says, I suppose that those who dissent from prevailing government orthodoxy will be able to whisper their truths in the ears of others, but they'll be prevented from living these truths out in every sphere of society. And we're simply seeing that come true more and more and more. And as I heard you say in the very beginning of the show, it's the rate of acceleration that has been the most stunning thing, especially in the past few weeks with the government's reinterpretation of Title IX and its effect on transgender bathroom bills.
Well, let's talk about that, because you've written about that in an Illinois school district lawsuit that mm-hmm. is brought there. What's the story?
So in the first of its kind, a school district in northern Illinois has been sued by the federal government because the federal government has decided that Title IX of the Civil Rights Act includes protections for gender identity underneath the umbrella of sex discrimination. And I know these are really kind of wonkish, policy-specific issues, but they're really, really important. Title IX was passed to basically prohibit unequal sex discrimination in school. So if a girl wanted to apply for a major, she couldn't be denied access to that major because she was a woman. Or if you wanted to have female sports, there had to be equal sports. And so now the government has adopted this position. Actually, the Department of Education has adopted the position that gender identity, or this understanding that your how you view your gender identity is something different than your biological sex, is protected under sex discrimination. It's worth noting that this is a lawless reinterpretation, and the Department of Education doesn't have the authority to issue this interpretation, because that's something that Congress has to do. And so what they did was, a school in northern Illinois asked a child, a transgender child, it was a boy who identified as a girl, and this boy, let's be frank about who this is, it's a boy, wanted to have access to a ladies' locker room. And the school put up a privacy curtain. They tried to make proper accommodations for the student, understanding his circumstances. And even those modest accommodations were still considered discriminatory. And so against the protest and privacy concerns of other girls, the student sued the school, and the government has sided with the student that this is sex discrimination. And, you know, as my article that I wrote at ERLC.com makes the case, is that because local school districts are so dependent upon federal funding, that federal funding requires schools to be compliant. And if schools aren't compliant with the newfound government rules or policies, they can have their funds withheld or threatened to be withheld. And so essentially what's happening is that this whole new idea of bringing gender identity under the umbrella of sex discrimination is going to be coming to every school district in America, in my opinion.
It strikes me as nonsensical, sex discrimination, but it sounds like the new definition is gender identification discrimination. Mm-hmm. Am I reading too darkly into this?
Yeah, so I mean, no, that's exactly right. But this is very, very problematic. I mean, this understanding that someone can be actually distinct and different than what their chromosomes and what their physique and what their biology actually tell them to be is nothing but ideology. This is something that's unique to the West. It's built on this understanding of self-mastery, that we can kind of create a dualism between our body and who we perceive ourselves as. And what's really interesting is that there is no legal definition of gender identity, because no one can really concretely describe what it is. Now, we do know that people have acute experiences of gender dysphoria. That is indisputable. The question is, what do we do with people who have experiences of gender dysphoria? And the movement of the government and in pop culture is to say that we ought to automatically just affirm this individual's perception of themselves. So if a boy thinks he's a girl, well, by golly, we'll call him a girl, even though, again, his body, his brain, his physique, and his chromosomes, and his anatomy are all male. So I think there's a huge disagreement on what the remedy is for someone who has experiences of gender dysphoria. And I think the government has taken the wrong side on this. They've inflamed the culture war, and they're going to basically use the heavy-handed nature of federal government to bring local school districts into compliance.
You say, if critics say the court has not altogether rejected biological categories of gender, those critics would be wrong. What do you mean?
So when Title IX was passed in 1972, I believe, the prevalent understanding of what sex meant then was biological sex. And so we've seen the government, again, adopt something that's based on ideology. And again, I want to emphasize this over and over and over again, is that they've based this new definition of sex and sex discrimination without the authority to do so. Whenever the law changes, you have to have Congress change those laws. Bureaucratic departments of federal agencies don't have the ability to just willy-nilly rewrite law based on their interpretation of the law. Congress has to pass the law.
What do you say to someone who says, and this is a case in the small town where I live, my kids are no longer in school, but they say, look, we live in a very conservative area. I know these teachers, the majority of them are church-going Christians. You say that isn't going to matter. Why?
Well, honestly, it's not going to matter much longer, because the very nature of how the system of public education has been structured in American government and American culture over the last 30 and 40 years has seen an increasingly top-down approach to public education. So it was the case that states and local jurisdictions had the primary authority and control over curriculum and different policies. And we've handed more and more and more of that authority and control over to the federal government, and in exchange for taking money from the federal government. And we know that whenever someone takes the money of the federal government, what do they have to do? They have to follow the rules of the federal government. And so it doesn't matter really what community you live in. I live in a very conservative community myself. But because the government can threaten the loss or withdrawal of money from a school's educational funding, that's going to send the message to the school that we better just go ahead and get in line rather than deflect or defy the Department of Education. I should say, though, there hopefully are some good remedies here to this. We've seen in this case in Northern Illinois that I mentioned, there's over 50 different families of these teenage girls who were protesting this boy being in the locker room. They're now suing the federal government to basically say that you're violating our right to privacy, which is a constitutional protection, and that you are lawlessly reinterpreting Title IX. So there is some hope in the courts with parents fighting back. But at the same time, what do we see that happened almost 2 weeks ago in the Fourth Circuit? The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in favor of a student who said that he was being discriminated against because he wanted to use a female's restroom because he identified as a female, and that the court actually agreed with him. And so depending on the nature of the circuit court splits, this is bound to get to the Supreme Court eventually. And sadly, because we now live in a society where the Supreme Court decides all of our contentious cultural battles, the Supreme Court's going to be put in the place of deciding whether or not Congress had the authority to redefine Title IX to include gender identity as a form of sex discrimination. The other thing that could potentially happen is, with a new president, you have a change in administration and you have a change in who heads these federal departments. Just speaking candidly, neither of the party's candidates right now leave me much hope to think that they'll make any different changes of what's happening now. Yeah, so I'm really not optimistic about what's going to happen at the presidential level. But right now, we can at least wait and see what the courts are going to do.
Andrew Walker is Director of Policy Studies for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission for the Southern Baptist Convention, author of a recent column titled How the Federal Government is Transforming Public Education. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Andrew, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Folks, LCMS Life Ministries is on the front lines of the culture wars. They're devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in church and in the culture at large. You can find out about their work at lcms.org/life, lcms.org/life. That's LCMS Life Ministry. In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., Mark and Molly Hemingway will join us to get an update on the November elections, and we'll talk about a New York Times column titled What Makes Texas, Texas? With Terry Mattingly. They left something out. Terry will tell us what it is in Hour 2.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.